And now, Rick Ballew takes you into the night on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, great week ahead of us, no doubt about it. Getting ready for the NFL Combine at the end of the month. A tiny bit of downtime now, at least for some, not for ASJ. You'll find out tomorrow if the Jaguars are going to exercise that $4 million option, even though he tweeted out about a month or so ago, goodbye to Duval. We'll see officially. I think everyone believes that the move is somewhere else for the tight end who did not deliver in 2018. Really, it goes down. If you were the top five disappointments of the Jacksonville Jaguars in 2018, I would put Austin Seferian Jenkins in the top two or three. That's how highly regarded I had him going in, and I watched what he did in the month of August, and then, of course, injuries just took over, and it ended up being a just a disaster for him personally. Speaking of which, the word disaster yesterday at the Daytona 500, just talked about it with Frank and in company, and thank you to Miller Lite. It just gets bigger. It gets better every year. Sold out yesterday. Maybe the best weather for a Daytona 500 that I can ever think of. And this being my 25th time that I'd actually gone to the 500, I've seen the changes. I know that yesterday some thought that it was a boring race until the very end. I don't agree with that. I thought we saw double wide, triple wide, you know, the way that they have segmented it now, 60-lap stage one, 60-lap stage two. Then the 80-lap, you know, shootout, which you know is going to be ripped apart, and we see it now in continuous years where they just can't figure out a way to really race without all of the wrecks. And yesterday was a day filled of destruction. I don't have a clue as to what NASCAR is going to do with declining ratings, declining attendance. Both were up yesterday. I think the weather had a little bit of something to do with that. It was just a spectacular day. So, listen, I love my time at Daytona. I'll be back for the summer race. I don't miss them. It's a great party. I'm not going to lie. That's what it's all about for me. I don't have a particular driver that I root for. Used to be a big fan of Tony Stewart. You know, I fooled the people in Chicago for those years when I would fly into the Daytona 500 and cover the event in February, and I would also every single Monday have the winning driver on my show. I should say everyone not named the Intimidator. Dale Earnhardt would not join me. But I talk with Tony Stewart many times. I talk with Jeff Gordon many times. I talk with Ernie Irvin and Dale Jarrett, and I almost threw in Rusty Wallace, but that'd be a lie because he never won at the end. But, I mean, they get it. NASCAR gets it. I would like to see other sports take a little step back and acknowledge how NASCAR treats its fans. I used to think that that was the way in hockey. Well, the younger generation sees things a little bit differently. I'm sure there are people right here in town that will tell you that the PGA Tour, that's gotten a tad bit snooty, right? I mean, didn't there used to be a time and a place where, I don't want to take you back to the 1930s in Major League Baseball where they were out drinking with the writers, the old baseball players were, but, I mean, golf used to be a little bit lax. Golf was always considered, you know, one of those fringe sports, even in the great era of Arnold's Army against the young gun and Jack Nicklaus. I don't know what it is, but today's golfer is a little bit more private. Probably has something to do with the explosion of the media. Back in the day, a sport like this, no matter where you were going, you could be at the John Deere Classic, for crying out loud. There wouldn't be a ton of media. They made themselves very accessible to those in the media. Today, it has exploded. Golf is huge. We saw a very interesting round at Riviera over the weekend. Rain did its part, but when it was all said and done, pretty exciting tournament. Four consecutive top four finishes all of a sudden for Tiger Woods. Yes, I'm going to talk about Tiger Woods. I'm a 51-year-old male. Of course I'm going to talk about Tiger Woods. You think I'm going to give Denny Hamlin all my love for the next couple of hours? You know, that was a cool moment. The coolest moment I've ever seen at Daytona was obviously when Dale won. And that was really special. And at that point in my life, I was just trying to understand what NASCAR meant. And I looked at NASCAR and compared it an awful lot to the PGA Tour. Even though neither one is truly an individual sport, because these golfers will rave about the work with their caddy. They'll rave about their golf coach or their swing coach. And, you know, they'll talk about nutrition and everything else that goes into it. NASCAR cannot complete a sentence without, first of all, I'd like to thank Quaker State. I'm running on the best possible oil known to man. If it wasn't for the good folks at Quaker State, I don't know if I could have completed 200 laps. And then they'll go on and say, I'd also like to thank Interstate Batteries. It's the only type that I put in my flashlight. Like to thank Charmin. It's the dadgummest best toilet paper I've ever used. And all I do is use toilet paper. I'm like a five-flush guy, and I'm going nonstop Charmin. It works. So, I mean, and then they'll thank their crankshaft guy and their spotter and their crew chief. Of course, the guys in the garage. All right. And I love watching the guys in the garage. I love watching them go through calisthenics. I love watching them getting in a little bit of a stretch, work up a lather. The lug nut guy. I mean, you talk about reps, guys hitting off a tee, guys hitting just straight fastballs before you mix in a curve or, you know, anything that wrinkles either way. I'm talking about just mid 60 mile an hour fastballs. Those are like the lug nut guys, keening on them yesterday. Working at their craft, exercising it. I mean, that's great stuff. That's theater. And I'm able to get that right from behind pit road in that Miller Lite suite. It is absolutely phenomenal. And I'm blessed. And I'm blessed that I got to take my dad there yesterday at the age of 81. It's the first time he ever went. And it was a great day. So truly excited about the Daytona 500. And I will be back again this summer with Miller Lite there for whatever the hell they're calling it now. I remember when it was Firecracker and it was the Pepsi 400. I think it's like the Coke Zero 400. Yeah, they kind of change sponsors the way that a Kardashian will change a boyfriend, but that's okay in NASCAR. Whatever the event is, it'll be the best damn soda that you and I have ever had. And you know that that's coming up in a couple of months, so I definitely look forward to that. Denny Hamlin was cool. The loss of Joe Gibbs and his son. Joe Gibbs called it the most memorable sporting event in his life. Let that one register. This is the same man who won three Super Bowls with three different quarterbacks with the Washington Redskins. The mega empire of the National Football League. He said after the untimely passing of his son recently, his son, the man who went out and found Denny Hamlin. Hamlin was quick to credit him. But Joe Gibbs called this the greatest sporting accomplishment and moment of his life. Wow, that's pretty powerful. And I did. I thought it was the second greatest situation I had ever seen at Daytona outside of when Dale Earnhardt won for the very first time. The 20 years of frustration, the donuts that he put on, and you know, I don't care if you're a gearhead or I don't care if you're, you know, a seven-digit yuppie, all right, who doesn't tip. You were caught up in that moment. Dale Earnhardt riding down pit road with everyone out there was really cool. So the point I was trying to make is that I think everyone else in sports could really learn something from the NASCAR environment. They almost overdo it. They're so apologetic. They're so, it's about everyone else. They really cater to the fan. And I just see yesterday everyone walking in with coolers and backpacks and all of this. And you can't help nowadays but think, wow. I mean, the tough security here at a Jaguars game. The tough security every single where and place that we go. Now, I don't know if they check coolers and do that stuff, but just the fact that they allow you to bring that type of material into a sporting event is kind of scary. Plenty of security there. And again, I don't know. I I didn't bring anything with me, so I just walked straight in. I didn't stick and see if that was the case. But, listen, I've seen plenty of sporting events that now it takes a long time to get into a stadium. That is an issue. But just the way they go overboard to thank their fans, their teammates, their crew, certainly their sponsors and everyone else, it is somewhat of a humbling sport, and it must be, if you cover this full time, pretty cool. I can't think of anything else right now, competitively, in sports, or really anything else that would be in that particular category, whether it be Hollywood, with actors, or rock stars. No one gives back like the folks at NASCAR. It's really incredible. And I tried to make the point earlier that it used to be that way in the PGA Tour. It's not now. It's not even close. I'm not saying there's not individuals out there who do theirs, but I'm talking about collectively as a group. Same with hockey. I don't know. I think it's a combination of the younger kid, and I think it's the combination of social media and just the explosion of the media in general, that's not the way it is. And, I'm sure there's some people out there, NASCAR-wise, that really follow this sport year-round that would disagree with my comment there and say, Baloo, you don't know what you're talking about. I've noticed how that has changed in the last 20 to 25 years. I talked about it last week. There are people now who don't believe that some of these young gun drivers have put in enough work. Worked on the car, knew the car. Okay, came from nothing. Worked 9 to 5 somewhere. Came home, washed the hands, and went out and drove. Stole daddy's keys, started on the dirt roads. Now you got some young gun. And is that comparable to golf, or most of these golfers are... I'm so bored today. I'm hanging out at the country club. What am I going to do? I already played 18 this morning. Should I take a swim? Maybe I'll order a Reuben. That's the way it is for these country club folk. They're not from the cities. They're not from the streets. That's the way NASCAR used to be, right? Some of these kids now are really kind of from the Silver Spoon. So I can see how that affects longtime NASCAR fans that they're not from the same ilk that we saw years ago. And again, I don't know enough about it to comment any farther. These are things that I have heard and read. Anyway, saw some folks from Jacksonville. Thank you to Miller Lite. What a time. What a day. What an absolutely gorgeous day at the track. The Great American Race. Congratulations to Denny Hamlin and the Gibbs family. Thought it was a pretty cool event. And again, looking forward to going back out there for the race in July. You may not hear me mention NASCAR again till then. I'm just going to be honest with you. All right, we got a lot to do. A lot of Jaguars news. Going to hit this post on time. I'm going to do everything right this week. Going to come back, talk about the Jags a little bit. Some moves that have been made, another move that we do foresee. The latest here on Jalen Ramsey and Josh Allen, which is a whole bunch of nothing. But then again, it is mid-February, so I'm going to make this Mickey Mantle. I once had a program director said to me, if you have the local writer on from the Akron Beacon News or the Akron Beacon Journal, make him into Mickey freaking Mantle. That's what I'm going to do here on this Josh Allen story. I mean, who cares, right? Well, I care. It's February 18th. I'm going to make a huge deal about it. And I need to ask you a question. It is the Exit Real Estate Gallery question of the night. It involves a head coach. I'm going to share it with you on the other side. This is 1010XL and 92.5 FM, Into the Night with Rick Baloo.
Into the Night with Rick Baloo on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
All right, you just heard the spot right here on our stations. Bob Seger rolling back into town. That's always a good time. Calling this the final time for Bob Seger. I don't buy it. I don't buy it with any act. I don't buy it with the Rolling Stones. Keith Richards keeps getting blood transfusions. He'll play till he's 125. They still pay him, and they're paying him well. But this is great. You know why? It's a Sunday night, LeVay. You know what that means?
What's that?
It means I can party all night. It's like the Daytona 500 yesterday.
Got all day Monday to recover.
Sunday nights are kind of like my Saturday nights. If you drop Bob Seger on me, the truth teller will be there. Doing plenty of drinking, just never any driving. All right, glad you're with us. 7:21. We're just barely underway. It's a great week. I'm with you for four nights. I never take one day a week off. Never have done it. I've always just take a week off. I'm taking one day off this week, though, because I'm playing golf in the Dominican Republic Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. The chances of me rolling in that Monday cloudy, hazy are real, real good. But anyway, I'm looking forward to this week. And as soon as I get back, it's tremendous because we have, obviously, the Combine. Then I am going to take a vacation week, which I haven't taken since July. And then, of course, when I return, it's the Players. So it's a huge month. You get done with the Players, and bam, before you know it, you're really staring at the eye of the Gators and the Seminoles and the Dogs and the Canes and everyone else getting ready for those spring games in very early April. You talk about great talent. I see that over in God's country, MC Hammer will be playing a show after the spring game. I may have to make the pilgrimage over to God's country. If you're going to have MC Hammer in town, I mean, when MC Hammer was relevant, I was a student at Florida State. I don't know what those young bucks are going to do, what those young kids are going to do. They're going to be like, oh, you know, maybe my mom and dad used to listen to MC Hammer. I don't know. Do you young kids, do you like old school music like that? I mean,
it depends. Yeah, I mean, it just depends on your parents. Like, my mom was a huge 80s rock fan. So, I mean, I like some of that stuff and listen to it every now and then.
I mean, my mom and dad, my mom used to, like, drill down my throat like the Everly Brothers and Connie Francis and Elvis Presley. You know, and I listened to all that. My dad listened to, you know, Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin and Tom Jones and Barry White and Lou Rawls. So I had appreciation for that type of music. I mean, that's what you got in station wagon rock, AM rock on station, you know, back in the day. But there's so much to choose from now. Then again, my daughter right now is at a Fleetwood Mac concert in Tampa with my brother's daughter. Two 16-year-olds at a Fleetwood Mac show with no Lindsey Buckingham on guitar. So there are some of the younger generation that'll love this, with both Seeger here in town and MC Hammer over in Tallahassee. All right, enough of that. Let's get to what's important. That is football. This town loves football. You know, I really today wanted to get into a conversation, believe it or not, about Bruce Bochy. He has announced that he is retiring at the end of the year. Bruce Bochy has been a phenomenal skipper for nearly 30 years. He spent 12 years in San Diego, and now he's spent 20-some-odd years in San Francisco, where he has won three World Series. He's going to pass by 2,000 career wins this year. But he's somewhat unrecognizable. He's certainly a very underrated manager, and it can't be the size of the market that he has been in. I mean, San Diego isn't all that big, but it's right next door to L.A. It's still a top 25 market. San Francisco's huge. It's a top five market. I think it's that whole East Coast, West Coast that plays into it. But it got me thinking today, and I was really kicking it around earlier this afternoon. I said, who's the best coach manager around not named Bill Belichick? And I immediately eliminated hockey because I knew that that wouldn't apply with a lot of our audience. And I wanted to do it from 2000 on. I said, all right, well, if I do football and I put Coughlin on there, everyone's going to pick Coughlin because I know they're going to think of 96 and 99, and then they're going to think of the two Super Bowl wins. But I need to convince them that you can't think of the late 90s. And I said, you know what, let's not put Tom in there because that'll skew that particular poll. And then I thought, well, how can I ask this listening audience to tell me who's better, Greg Popovich, Bruce Bochy, Terry Francona, or Steve Kerr? And then I said, does that really register? I mean, can these folks be passionate about Steve Kerr? They're going to give me the same argument they did with Phil Jackson, that Phil Jackson won all these rings, but he did it because he had Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen and Kobe Bryant and Shaq. And we always heard the question, wouldn't it be great to see if Phil Jackson could start from scratch and build with the New York Knicks? We never found out. Is Steve Kerr in that category now? In other words, plug in a coach and you win with the talent that you have. Greg Popovich has been phenomenal. He's had a pretty talented roster. No one's going to argue with that. Terry Francona finally won in Boston. It took 86 years. He won twice. Then they outed him because of prescription painkillers. Filthy, ugly, sewer. The sewer system that is the Boston media crushed them. He almost won a couple of years ago with freaking Cleveland. I mean, are you kidding me? No one wins in Cleveland outside of the king, that being LeBron James. I said, nah, it's not going to work with this audience. Know your audience, Baloo. It's not going to work. You need to get to football. And you need to pose the question like this. It's the Exit Real Estate Gallery question of the evening. Outside of Bill Belichick, because that's the obvious answer, who's the best coach right now in the NFL? If you had your say, you were running a team, whether it's here in Jacksonville or anyone else for that matter, who would you want running your football team? And I thought about it for a moment. And I actually was confused. Because the answer that came to mind to me was Andy Reid. And the last time I checked, Andy Reid has been a lifetime of the bridesmaid, but not a bride. He hasn't been able to win the big game. But why do I believe that if we were to rank, and we'll test out tonight's poll, he's one of the guys that I listed. Why do I believe that he would be number one? Is it Mike Tomlin, who's under fire right now in Pittsburgh? Guys won a Super Bowl ring. You realize there's only six coaches with Super Bowl rings, not named Bill Belichick, and one of them just came back in after a decade off in John Gruden. I mean, do any one of these Super Bowl winning coaches really stop traffic on this Monday night? I mean, does Pete Carroll do it for you? Or do you think of what in the heck did they do against New England in that Super Bowl? How can I vote for him? Is it John Harbaugh? I think a John Harbaugh is a great special teams coach and kind of a rah-rah guy with unbelievable defensive players. Incredible talent. Is it Doug Peterson in his second year? He's off to a tremendous start. Has he earned it? Is it Sean Payton in New Orleans? Okay. So there you go. It is a hard question. You know what we're missing? Tom Coughlin, Bill Parcells, Mike Ditka, Jimmy Johnson. We're missing a lot of classic coach. And I know I just listed some of the very best there. But Ted Marchibroda, okay? Guys who won and won and won but couldn't win the playoffs. See Marty Schottenheimer. See Marvin Lewis. That's tenure. That's years and years and years. Joe Gibbs, we talked about him at the start of the show. Three Super Bowl champions with three different quarterbacks. We're changing head coaches at a rate of about six a year in the NFL. Good luck figuring and choosing this when you're looking at names that are Adam Gase. Okay? How does that sit with you tonight? How does Cliff Kingsbury sit with you tonight after he was fired at Texas Tech? Never won 10 games at Texas Tech. Fired, and somehow he's the head coach of the Arizona Cardinals. Cliff Kingsbury. All right. Is it good luck choosing Jay Gruden in D.C.? All right. Is it Bruce Arians, who had one good run in Phoenix and is considered an offensive genius? Is he the guy? Is it Matt LaFleur? That's my point, folks. This is a really hard question. If I was asked you, pick me a quarterback to start your team, or pick me the best offensive lineman to start your team, or pick me the best defensive player to start your team, you'd be running for the far end. You'd have your guy. You'd know exactly what you want. This is what we need, and this is why. But it becomes a much more difficult question when I throw out, who is the best head coach in the NFL today? Not named Bill Belichick. It is a very hard question to answer. And again, I would answer and have Andy Reid. The four selections that I threw out there for you to choose from: Mike Tomlin, Andy Reid, Sean Payton, or another. Let us know. We've only had the poll up for less than 40 minutes, And so far, 49% say Andy Reid, 42% say Sean Payton. Mike Tomlin's getting 5% of the vote. Pittsburgh Steelers have had three head coaches in 50-plus years. It is just out of this world. Chuck Knoll, Bill Cowher, Mike Tomlin. It is the mark of consistency. It's one of the great organizations, yet they have never paid their players. How many have got up and left for bigger money, including our own Leon Searcy? The list is forever. And look at the problems that they're dealing with right now with Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, and Ben Roethlisberger. There's a lot of people in Pittsburgh that want to fire Mike Tomlin even today. It is a really difficult situation to be a part of. But the Rooney is such a trusting family and one that is extremely loyal, maybe in this case to a fault. I always looked at it this way. You only fire a guy if you know you can get better. And that should be the case in every form of our life. I happen to think Mike McCarthy, who's not even on this list and isn't even presently a head coach anywhere in the National Football League, is one of the two or three best coaches in the game. He's unemployed. I mean, he's getting paid from Green Bay, but he's not getting up tomorrow morning going to work anywhere. And if you look at some of the names, and I mentioned a few of them, that are employed and are going to work, what is going on? Seriously. How could some of the coaches that I just mentioned have opportunities and a guy like Mike McCarthy does not? Now, I know the thinking was that McCarthy was only interested in one place and one place only, and that was reportedly New York with the Jets. He wasn't interested in Cleveland. Cleveland's got Freddie Kitchens, and everyone in Cleveland loves him right now because he looks like one of theirs. Okay? I mean, Freddie Kitchens has never left the plate anything but clean, and that's a beautiful thing. Neither have I. So I can relate to that. Think about the people in Cleveland right now tonight relating to that. Probably 25 degrees. It's been dark since 4 o'clock this afternoon. They know they got a guy that they can hang on to. But we know nothing about Freddie Kitchens. I remember him as a quarterback at Alabama about 150 pounds ago. He's now the main guy in Cleveland. And you got someone like Mike McCarthy out there who's not at work. That's scary. Give me your thoughts on this. You want to call in? Absolutely. I'll take some of your opinions. 641-1010. That is a number. We'll do that coming up here in just a couple of moments. Now, I think of the NFL, and I think of its incredible history, and I do think of the great coaches and the great eras and the dynasties and the way that the game has changed. And there's been so much complaint about the way that the league is run, the rules at the top, the organization at the top, the bureaucracy at the top, Roger Goodell, all the way down from the National Football League Players Association, the big story that came down Friday with Colin Kaepernick. We don't know about officials. We don't know about rules. Owners are getting paid. Players are getting paid. Where are the great coaches? I've never seen an era like this. Bill Belichick's got a couple of years left. What happens when he walks away? Who is the best coach in the National Football League? It is a bizarre situation. And I'm not saying that some of these young guys won't turn out to be something special. Maybe they will. But there's a lot more wait and see than we know. And that includes Doug Marrone here in town. I think the passionate Jaguar fan is in wait and see mode with Doug Marrone. I mean, has he met what you expected when you heard that he was going to take the job? Tough coach, hard ass, Coughlin type of guy. Has he been a little bit more player friendly than you thought? I think he's a very good coach, Doug Marrone. I do, and I'm not saying that just because I'm on the payroll. I think he's a good coach. Do I think he's the best coach? No. I think he's a good coach. And in a league that right now I think there are more coaches with a lot to prove than they've already proved it, if that makes any sense. Marrone's got to be, certainly in the top 15. Has to be. There's way too many unknowns. I mean, I don't want to say it's because of default, but I mean, look at all these new coaches. How can you put any one of those new coaches ahead of him? They haven't even coached a game. All right, it is a mess, but let's get to you on it. Let's do that. Yeah, you can get us a couple of ways, 641-1010. I will grab some calls coming up as well. You can get me on Twitter tonight, Ballou, B-A-L-L-O-U, at 1010XL. That is on Twitter. Glad you're with us. We'll get to that coming up and the very latest on the Jacksonville Jaguars, including some guys who we did find out are officially going to stay on for 2019. That's coming up next.
Into the Night with Rick Ballou on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, ASJ has been released. I know they had till tomorrow to pick up that $4 million option. Jaguars made news today, picked up three options, one of those not being Austin Seferian Jenkins. He actually announced on Twitter about a month ago that was it. I mean, they come and go, they come and go, they come and go. That's professional athletics, including right here in town. But this one bothers me, and I don't know why. I mean, I've been wrong many, 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 many times before. My name is Rick Ballou, and I predicted the Jaguars would go to the Super Bowl this past year. I did. Not only that, I predicted them to play the Green Bay Packers. Neither one of those two teams even made it to the playoffs. I thought Austin Seferian Jenkins was going to have a huge year. I really did. And, yeah, I was fooled again. And it's hard not to get fooled if you're really honest with yourself on the Jaguars' practice fields. And I think it's several reasons why that happens. Number one, they are professional football players. And when you're working out on a day-to-day basis and you're out there, they're going to look good. It's not like college or high school where, yes, those are very talented football players to some extent, but they make a lot of mistakes. Professional football players should not make a lot of mistakes. And when you're in a situation where you're out there practicing and you know the play, you should be able to go out there and complete that play and make it look good. And they did. I thought Bortles would have a nice year. I thought he would be his safety valve, his dump down guy. I thought he was actually going to lead the football team in receptions. I thought ASJ would have 60 receptions. And I thought they'd spread it out with the wide receivers. You know, I thought he'd average maybe 8-9 yards a reception. Certainly didn't think he'd lead in receiving yards, but I thought he would lead in total receptions. He is now gone. Really begs the question. What in the hell are the Jaguars going to do at tight end? That is a lost situation right now. And they kept bringing him in and bringing him in late last year. What, Blake Bell returned? I do like O'Shaughnessy, but he's not, you know, your true number one tight end. Mel Kiper today released his mock draft, which I'm going to get into a little bit later on in the program. But you had the offensive lineman out of Florida, Juwan Taylor, going to Jacksonville in the first round. Kiper telling us that he believes they're going to go the free agency route, which I'm against as well. I've said for quite some time here, my perfect scenario would be Dwayne Haskins. Get him and go ahead and spend your free agency money on some other positions, which could end up being tight end. What are they going to do? This is a great draft for tight ends. It really is. Very, very strong draft. For tight ends, but yeah, this one hurts a little bit. Calais Campbell's back. We've known about that. That's a big move for the football team for every way that's imaginable. He's a great team leader, and he does it by example. He'll speak when he needs to, but if there's one thing that I've learned about covering the National Football League that is so different than really anything else, and that's certainly the case in college, leaders in the NFL speak by how they play. I don't care how vocal you are, how liked you are. If you do not get it done on the playing field in the NFL, the players are not going to respect you. There's a difference between respect and like. There's all sorts of guys who have come through here and all the other 31 NFL teams who their teammates really like. But if they can't play, there goes the respect card. So you have that more than anything right now with Calais Campbell. And that's a huge move. You're going to get him for another year. You're going to get him for two more years. I would say that that's probably it. Cody Davis is back. He's a guy who played well on special teams. You know, someone you can't really lean on as a safety, but he's a four-core special teams guy. And they like him. You know, he's one that they kind of single out that is somewhat of a, I don't know if he's a difference maker, but he's certainly very consistent. And that's good to have with your special teams unit. You know, special teams are so easily overlooked, and they shouldn't be, because they can really make the difference in winning or losing, but there's just so much put on, you know, what your team does when they have the football and what your team does when you're defending the other team who has the football. But you ask a guy like Joe DeCamillis, the special teams coordinator, I mean, this is a guy who played very well last year, so this is a nice signing. You know, bottom of the roster guy, but a healthy game day player. He may be the 45th guy on your roster, but he's someone you're going to have there every Sunday who's a four-core special teams guy. Their four-core special teams captain, Lorente McCray, his option was picked up. This one was somewhat surprising, only because this is one of those moves where you begin to cut corners, and you need to do that in order to create some cash. I'll look it up, but I want to say McCray's number for 2019 is like $2.75 million, somewhere in that category. Here's the question that needs to be asked. Why pay that if you can go out and get an undrafted free agent or a drafted player that you can get for $400,000 or $500,000? If he's a late round guy, even less. If he's undrafted and he's a rookie, I mean, and when you're trying to put together money under your salary cap, because you're trying to figure out what to do with Marcell Dareus, and you're trying to figure out what to do with Tashawn Gibson, and you're trying to figure out what you need to do if you're going to make a run at an offensive lineman or a tight end or a wide receiver in free agency, or if you need that money to go after Teddy Bridgewater or really make a run and spend $23, $25 million for Nick Foles. Well, you need to start slicing other contracts up. McCray's a guy that was thrown out there. He absolutely was. So I think it's just little things like this that says that now there's no way I expect Carlos Hyde to be back. Now, many people probably had him cut to begin with. But just because we think that doesn't mean that's the way that they're thinking. Does this mean that Tashawn Gibson is gone? Do they have any equation at all to it? Does this mean that Marcell Dareus is gone? Boy, I was really under the assumption a long time ago that he was absolutely going to be back for the 2019 season. Right now, I'm not so sure. They got to create some money. So I don't know how they're going to be able to do that. Where else are you going to be able to cut guys where you're going to be able to free up money? All right, Jeremy Parnell, we got that, $6 million. That one we have discussed a tremendous amount. But there's really not anyone else out there that I see. I mean, they'll make moves like not bring back Dante Moncrief. And I mentioned going out and getting a wide receiver. Just to tell you how bad this year's wide receiving core is throughout free agency, I've seen a couple of lists lately where Moncrief is like the seventh ranked wide receiver who's available. Scary. Where are you going to get wide receivers? New England's going to release four of them. They're going to be gone. I mean, Julian Edelman, who was at the race yesterday, waved the green flag, dropped it on us at the start of the race at 3:05. You realize a team like the Patriots, outside of him, Philip Dorsett's a free agent. That do anything for you? Chris Hogan's a free agent. That do anything for you? Cordell Patterson is a free agent. That do anything for you? Josh Gordon is a free agent. Does that do anything for you? So New England, and Gordon actually had more yardage than Edelman when he was playing with him. That means they're going to release their first, third, fourth, and fifth wide receivers. Gone. Free agents. Gone. In New England. They're losing their punter and their kicker. Gone. Unless they re-sign him. They're losing their highly priced defensive end in Trey Flowers. They're losing arguably their best two interior defensive linemen in Malcolm Brown and the former first-round draft pick, Danny Shelton. Gone and gone. They're losing their second and third corner, Jason McCourty, and the young kid who played very well for him. What was his name again? The kid out of Maryland. Name escaped me right now. The defensive back who really did some good things for him. What was his name? Jonathan Jones. Jason McCourty may retire. Excuse me. The other McCourty may retire. Gronk may retire. They're losing their best offensive lineman, the former Gator, and Trent Brown. So my point is there's your Super Bowl champion, New England Patriots. Look at all the moves that they're going to be forced to make to try to become a playoff team once again. The problems don't only exist here in Jacksonville. The problems are league-wide. Every team has to deal with this to some extent. It's how you're able to plug and play. I just mentioned, 12 or 13 different key players for the New England Patriots. They're going to lose the most of those players. Yet how are they going to be able to respond? Same thing now for the Jacksonville Jaguars. How are they going to be able to respond by replacing key players to your football team? You keep taking a guy here and a guy there off that defense. Sooner or later, is it going to begin to wear down on you? I mean, when Barry Church lost it, he kind of lost it the way that, let's say, Brett Boone did after he got off steroids. Or let's say a way a running back does when he hits the age of 30. I mean, it seemed like it almost turned overnight for Barry Church. Now, all of a sudden, here's Deshaun Gibson, who I'll say right now, I'd be surprised if he returns. There's too much what if, too, when you look at the youth that's coming up. And you know, that's why the injury last year to Harrison, I thought, really hurt this football team. I wanted to get the reps and play in those last two games. That was bad. That hurt a tremendous amount. You know, you release Marcell Dareus, you release Malik Jackson, you're going to create all that money. You know, how confident do you feel about Avery Jones in an everyday role? Do you have to cut Avery Jones at about $4 million if you want to plug in Marcell Dareus? These are decisions this football team is going to have to make. Taven Bryan did very little backing up Calais Campbell at the big defensive end position. They move him inside now to three technique. Can you afford to do that flat out in place of Malik Jackson? Now, Marcell Dareus played both positions last year. What are you going to do? We've seen mock drafts where the Jaguars are selecting a defensive tackle with the seventh pick in the first round. I can't imagine what this city would do, what this fan base would do, if you found out they had selected a defensive tackle in the first round. Very confusing. So some moves made today. Good moves. I like Calais, obviously. Cody Davis gets no recognition, but he's a good football player. Lorente McCray is a good teammate. I like him. Never mind. I was going to say something, but I just realized that I shouldn't say it because of the situation. But things I do see every once in a while as the sideline reporter. I really like Lorente McCray. He's a good team leader, and he deserves to be the captain of the special teams. I guess the point I'm trying to make is if you had 53 Lorente McCrays out there or 45 on game day, you'd be a better team than you would not. Yeah, he's an effort guy. He's a guy that demands respect. And for other guys, let's just say next to him to play hard. And if they don't play hard or they don't act the way that they should, he's not afraid to get on them. There's not a lot of guys on the team that are that way. He is one of those guys. That I do know. All right, I also know this. We got some fighting coming up. The big situation last night. Boy, that was late night. Cain Vasquez knocked out in 23 seconds. What was that? Francis Ngannou. It looked like the leg buckled, but he really caught him with a blow. Now we have a huge fight coming up again, reportedly at some point soon, with Conor McGregor. and the Cowboys. So let's put a couple of moments on that. With the the very latest as to what is going on in the world of the MMA. We'll do that with our buddy Charlie Jimerson. Then we'll get back to our conversation. Still waiting for more reaction from you. Maybe I put you in a situation where I've created a question that you just can't answer because it's hard. Who is the best coach in the NFL right now, not named Bill Belichick? All that's coming up in hour number two, Into the Night with Rick Ballew.
It's time for the Takedown. Where Charlie Jimerson from the law firm of Jimerson & Cobb, PA, discusses upcoming MMA fights and current MMA news.
ESPN had it last night. They had a good one. Of course, the main showing or the main event didn't live up to the advanced billing. 23 seconds. Nice pop by Ngannou and Velasquez. Velasquez, same guy who knocked out Brock Lesnar a few years ago. The knee buckle, and that was it. 23 seconds in. Talk about NASCAR a little bit earlier, about just how rewarding they are to one another and always credit each other. That was kind of the way last night after the fight with Cain Velasquez, even though he lost for the first time in a couple of years, was that way with the Predator, with Francis Ngannou, and it was kind of cool to see. Good sportsmanship inside the cage. Let's bring in our friend Charlie Jimerson. Of course, he is with Jimerson and Burr, and he joins Rick Ballew whenever something big is happening inside the MMA. How you doing, Charlie?
Ballew, you NASCAR-loving Miller Lite-chugging goodbye. How you doing, young man?
Yeah, I'm doing great. It was a fun Sunday, and the best part of it is I got to be in home. I got to be home in time for the 23 seconds worth of the fight. So I didn't see much else, but overall, how did ESPN do?
I thought it was a great night. I mean, there was great overnight figures. As I understand, it was one of the most well-watched fight nights that they've had in quite a few years. So ESPN's loving it. UFC's loving it. Main event was, an unfortunate circumstance. Left you with more questions than answers. Mm-hmm. But I think it was a great night. There was some awesome fights on the undercard. Really a bummer to see Cain Velasquez come back like that. I mean, there's left your questions is whether his knee gave out or, was it something that's just, is this going to be an injury prone existence for Cain from now on? Or was it that powerful uppercut that buckled his knee? For the record, I think it was, the punch that mm-hmm. Took his legs out, but Ngannou's a powerful, powerful fighter. Even with short, sneaky shots that I didn't know that he had. So,
yeah.
All in all, good night of fights.
All right, so you think it was the punch by Ngannou that did that? Because when I watched it, the knee buckled, then I was surprised to see Velasquez actually get up and walk. I mean, I thought he tore his ACL. I'm not laughing. I'm saying it because I can't imagine the pain and what that must have been like. But I was surprised he got up and was able to walk after that.
Yeah, if you watch the tape, he's got him against the cage. He went in head first. It was pretty sloppy. And Ngannou, who's a big, powerful man, he just had a short shot right there, clipped him right on the button. The knees buckled. Now, granted, when they buckled, it looked like it was could have been a pretty catastrophic knee injury. I have not seen any reports since last night that it was, in fact, a bad knee injury. If you look at the tape, it was very clearly a clean shot.
Yeah, it had been a couple of years for, Velasquez, and now the quick bout for him. At his age, what's next for Cain?
It's tough to speculate. I mean, he's got to go home and grapple with the question of just how much MMA his body can stand. Athletes don't get less injury-prone in their mid-30s. They tend to get more injury prone. I suspect that, sadly as it is, that he's probably already seen his best years as a fighter, that he's probably going to be spending the next decade in the doctor's office a lot. So it's a bummer because he'd been out for a long time and he was quite an accomplished champion during his run, but you just don't know if his body can hold up to the beating.
It's Spending a moment with Charlie Jimerson from Jimerson and Burr, joining Rick Ballew, the very latest after what happened one night ago, where Engano, the victory, first-round victory over Velazquez. All right, what about the Predator here now? I mean, interesting style and what he brings. I believe he was ranked third before the fight last night. What's next for this young man?
I think he's on the come up. I mean, he was a guy I was trying to sell to you 2 years ago as the next big thing. had a real unfortunate outing against Stipe, and Stipe Miocic really took him to the limit, tested him in many ways that Ngannou had never been tested before, and it was a confidence killer for him. He was clearly shook when he fought Derek Lewis at the next event, and he paid the price, and he's going to have to battle his way back, and I think this is a huge step towards that. The early scuttlebutt is that he may be getting that title fight versus Cormier.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of question on whether Lesnar can actually will actually be able to qualify, and if he's interested. If they can do that Cormier-Lesnar fight, they're going to do it because they want to give Cormier a big payday on the way out. But if they can't do Cormier-Lesnar, then you're going to look at Ngannou and Cormier, and that's going to be the big fight for Cormier's swan song.
All right. You definitely, I'm not going to put words in your mouth, but I assume that much like myself, and I'm not nearly the fight fan that you are, but I'm becoming more and more of one. Ngannou against Daniel Cormier would be a much better fight than Cormier against Brock Lesnar. But what about the general public? How much more pay-per-views would Lesnar sell?
Double.
Yeah, that's the issue. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, it's a money business. They're prize fighters still. So
right.
You know, Lesnar is the biggest draw that anybody. Lesnar, besides McGregor, is you know, McGregor has the phrase, it's the red panty payday.
Mm-hmm.
You know, break out the red panties because you've just hit the jackpot.
No doubt.
And Lesnar is the same type for the heavyweight division. If anybody can get a shot at him, he presents. I wouldn't say he presents low risk, but not as big of a risk as Ngannou does to Cormier. I think Cormier would just smash Lesnar.
Yeah,
it wouldn't even be close. I don't think Lesnar makes it out of the first round.
Yeah, Velazquez beat him. Yeah,
yep. Yeah. I don't think that Cormier or I'm sorry, Ngannou presents much more risk than Cormier. I mean, he has bona fide knockout power, and especially now that he's got his confidence back and he's loosened up, he's not so tight anymore, he's kind of probably worked through some of his mental issues, that could be a good fight.
Yeah.
Huge physical mismatch. I mean, Cormier has given up a lot there.
Really admire him, and he's getting up there as well, so it'd be nice to see him get some couple of nice paid fights. I'd like to see him fight both. I'm sure most fight fans would, but we'll see what happens. As we wrap things up, Joe Rogan said on his podcast that Conor McGregor and Donald Cerrone is going to happen. Who's not to believe Joe Rogan?
Right. That's pretty exciting. Yeah. That's pretty exciting stuff.
It's huge. I mean, it's about time. When do you think we'll see this?
Well, Dana came out today and said it's pretty far from a done deal, but that was the buzz this weekend. It looked like that might be a go. I mean, Cowboy versus Conor is a really interesting matchup. I mean, mainly because Cowboy's "I'll fight anyone, anytime" mantra has led to some really big wins in the UFC, but he's also had some really big losses as well. So I think that would be a really compelling matchup. Conor has, you know, obviously biggest pay-per-view draw in combat sports, and Cerrone himself is a beloved fighter by the fans. He's the all-time leader in wins and finishes in the octagon. So skill-wise, they'll match up. I mean, it'll get easy for us to get lost in the effervescent hype that will inevitably ensue, but I think Conor will come off as a favorite. I think Conor is a much better striker. Conor has, Cowboy's finished 16 fights via submission versus only, I want to say 9 or 10 knockouts. Most of all, Conor's wins are knockouts. So I think both fighters bring a lot to the table.
Yep.
High-level strikers, really fun. Really fun fight.
All right, Charlie. As always, we do appreciate it. Thanks for the very latest, and we'll catch up with you real soon.
Yes, sir.
There he goes. Charlie Jimerson with us whenever something big is happening in the world of the MMA. It's called The Takedown with Charlie Jimerson, with Jimerson and Burr. Pound for pound, one of the best law firms, always looking to make their opponent tap out. Go to JimersonFirm.com. No doubt about it. You know, I think whether it's boxing or it's the MMA, always have been a fan of first-round knockouts, but this one last night was a little bizarre because of the way that the knee really buckled for Velasquez. And then seeing him in the ring after the fact, I mean, really hurt, which in one way I like. Not to see that a man is in pain, both physically and emotionally, but I think there is a little too much nowadays of professionals that are there for the money. And losing sucks, but by the time they're showered up and dressed and they're heading out, they're over it. And we see that. We see it all the time. We see it in the great NFL. We see it in, and I understand that when you play 82 NBA games that you lose one, who cares? You play 82 NHL games, you lose one, who cares? You play 162 Major League Baseball games, you lose one, who cares? The fans care. Fans really care. And when you play 16 NFL games, those fans really, really care. I know I get off on this tangent quite a bit, but it's hard perhaps for some of these players to really care when we just went through it a moment ago. I just talked about five or six guys that I expect to be gone from the Jacksonville Jaguars, including Austin Seferian Jenkins. That word came down today. Talk about three who are returning: Calais Campbell, Corey Davis, Laurente McCray. How do you expect these guys to really get that upset about it when they go from team to team to team to team to team to team? It's their business. It's their time to get paid. You as the fan, you're so invested because you've been living through it and seeing it. You think Austin Seferian Jenkins, and if you've ever heard me, boy, did I ever overhype him. And he said the right thing about goodbye to Duval when he tweeted out a month ago, but do you think that he's devastated tonight, or that he was devastated a month ago when he heard this, or do you think through his agent he said, let's get you healthy, big guy, and another team will pick you up? Maybe you won't get as much bank this year, but it'll be a show-me year for you. Get back out there. If you can stay healthy, be productive, you'll get a big deal in 2020. You see a guy get beat last night like Cain Velasquez, he really took it to heart. Still got paid, whether he got 23 seconds or he went the entire match. Win or lose, he got paid. But it was cool to see that, at least in my opinion. I wish there was more of it. You know, and I don't know what else to tell you. It begins in college. It's almost like they're trained to be this way. I talked about it during recruiting recently. You see that kid take Georgia over Florida and over Auburn and Alabama and Florida State. And all the fans are hanging on that decision. Well, how can you really expect that kid to hate those other schools if he almost went to school there? You had to lay out the five hats to choose. I mean, what? You're going to hate them because they're your rival. And they always have. But how do you expect this kid to hate it? He almost decided. I mean, even the great Tim Tebow, who this city loves, how do you expect him to hate Alabama? He almost picked Alabama. I mean, Fred Taylor, the great Fred Taylor, the legendary story of him and Redale Anthony telling Bobby Bowden that they are coming to Florida State. And they woke up the next morning and they signed with Florida. How do you expect a guy like that to hate Florida? He almost went to Florida State. It's amazing. The fans don't understand it. They really don't. And you know what? That's okay. But you're always going to feel that way because since you've been a little kid, you've been born and raised, and that is in your arteries. It's in your blood. It's in your freaking DNA. These football players, they pick one over the other by the slightest margin, and they go from team to team to team in the NFL, and they get paid. Really, you know what? In a way, it's freaking evil. It is. You put so much into these players. And it's not all their fault. The process is evil because they'll be cut like ASJ. They'll be let go. They'll be cut because of salary cap reasons like Malik. Malik Jackson's a very, very good guy. Really enjoyed him. And I think they're a better team with him than without. But they're not a better team with him at the price that he's making. It is. It's pretty scary. All right, when we come back, more on this, a little bit on the Jags. Let's get into this Jalen deal. I mean, who the hell is Josh Allen? The guy completed 52% of his passes, and now he's calling out Jalen. Or did he really? Did he have some fun with the Bills Mafia? We'll get into that coming up next. Inside, or make that Into the Night with Rick Bullitt.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, news and notes brought to you by TruckCrashLaw.com coming up in about 15 minutes. In the meantime, we got some Jaguar news, by the way, of Buffalo to get into. Before we do that, though, let's check in with tonight's question of the night brought to you by Exit Real Estate Gallery. Matt LeVay, what do you have?
Yeah, Rick, we put it out there. Outside of Bill Belichick, who's the best NFL head coach right now? The front runner right now at 45% say Andy Reid. Just behind him is Sean Payton at 43%. Mike Tomlin at the bottom at 5%. And at 7%, we put it out there, other, and explain who and why.
Getting a lot of emojis tonight on Mike Tomlin. A lot of people laughing. Greg Norman, don't know if it's the Great White Shark, but he's laughing at Mike Tomlin for me even putting him up there. Pete Carroll's the second best. Says Chuck Reese.
Carroll's another that's getting a lot of love here on the text line.
David Osterreiter is saying, can't believe it, I even put Tomlin on the list. He is why the Steelers are average with above average talent. I mean, all right. So the head coach who's being mentioned is the head coach with the second longest tenure in the NFL. I believe Andy Reid's been around longer than Mike Tomlin. He absolutely has. Second longest tenure of any coach in the NFL. But he doesn't have a Super Bowl ring. And he is far and away, actually not far and away, he's right there with Sean Payton. But, I mean, if you add up the equation, that's pretty interesting. Now, there's not a lot of coaches in the NFL with Super Bowl rings. It's really scarce. You take away Belichick and his six, Harbaugh's got one. Okay, I don't think anyone's going to pick Harbaugh. I'm not going to speak for you. There's an other category here. We've asked you for why, but people aren't really listing outside of Pete Carroll anyone else's why. Maybe the 9% is all there for Pete Carroll. Doug Peterson is off to a phenomenal start, but still very young in his career. You know, John Gruden's back. After, 10-plus years out, Gruden's back, ran into an awful mess in Oakland. We'll see how he's able to turn that around, including three first-round draft picks that he has this year. But that's it. I mean, Sean Payton's on the list. So the quarterback and all of the criticism going towards Mike Tomlin. But the point is that the head coach that has been chosen is a guy who has the second longest tenure in the NFL as a head coach and has never won a Super Bowl, yet he's considered. You know, Dean Smith went to all these Final Fours. We'd go to like 16 Final Fours or something crazy like that, but he only won a couple of titles. Bobby Bowden was absolutely phenomenal. 14 consecutive top four finishes. But he only won two titles. You talk to someone like me who loved and... that was a Freudian slip. Did I just say loved? You need to start finding me, LeVay.
You got Valentine's Day on your mind still.
Oh, loves. Can we replace the D with an S, please? I still love them. They suck, but I still love them. I mean, they're like your children, okay? You know, even if they make awful mistakes, you still love them. Florida State sucks, but I still love them, so I'd like to replace the loved with loves. But, I mean, I used to get on them when they were incredible. Because Bowden was always considered one of the best coaches of his era, and to this day, one of the best coaches of all time. But Bobby Bowden lost national titles. You can't let Florida beat you in 97 with a rotation of quarterbacks. You can't have Darryl Bush trying to arm tackle Fred Taylor. You can't have Michael Irvin one-on-one beating Trace Sanders when you have Deion Sanders on the other side of the field in 1987. Okay, you can't go for the game-winning field goal in wide right one on third down and have the great Terrell Buckley on his heels on fourth and six, and Gino Toretta carves him up with Lawrence Copeland. I mean, so as great as he still is and was, he lost a lot of national titles. Bobby Cox, as great as he was, divisional championships every year with the Braves, only won it once. But at least these coaches and managers found a way to win them. Andy Reid hasn't won anything. Yet the Jacksonville audience is telling us tonight that he is the best coach in the NFL, not named Bill Belichick. And again, it's not like a guy who's been around for a few years and you're thinking he's going to get there. Andy Reid's been around for a long, long, long time. Fascinating. Tell you what else is fascinating, this story here today with Josh Allen. And, you know, I'm not sure how I feel. For those who don't know what I'm talking about, he signed an autograph to someone in the Bills Mafia who requested that he signed it by also printing, "Hey, Ramsey, am I still trash?" The end of the game, after everything that happened in Buffalo with Leonard Fournette in the fight and how Buffalo totally took advantage of the momentum and changed that game after the goal line stand. I should say a goal line stand headed by a couple of penalties previous to the goal line stand. But they were really getting on Ramsey at the end of that game. It was pretty vicious there in Buffalo. Conflicted by this. Here's Josh Allen. And, you know, Ramsey in the GQ article said that Josh Allen was trash. And this was before Josh Allen had ever played one NFL game. If you look at Josh Allen's numbers, 5-6 as a starter. All right, that's okay. 52.8% of his passes he did complete. That's awful. 214 yards, 10 touches, 12 picks. That's not good. Quarterback rating of 67.9. He looks better as far as the eye test. There is talent that is there. He obviously was a rookie who didn't have a lot around him in a process that has been really poor in Buffalo, where they are always changing at the top. And frankly, they have very little weaponry outside of Shady. Still, when you look at those numbers, brother, I wouldn't say anything to anyone. Feel free to earn a stripe or two. Jalen Ramsey is still, or not still, is simply the best cornerback in the National Football League. And we've talked on this show and on other shows on these stations quite a bit about whether or not Jalen talks too much and whether or not he needs to jam it up. We got into it a few weeks ago when Deion Sanders, interesting conversation about how Deion really made the point that he never talked about anyone else. He never talked about the other quarterback. All Deion did was talk about himself. Wouldn't that be the right advice for him to talk more about Jalen and let go of the other quarterbacks? I mean, we had a huge debate about that recently. But he's still Jalen Ramsey. This is Josh Allen. With the numbers that I just read to you, man, I wouldn't say a word. Plus, you're in freaking Buffalo. I mean, can you think of a worse place to play? I mean, that's almost like being in prison, but you're getting paid well. Playing football in Buffalo. Seriously. Can you think of anything worse than that? Oh, by the way, Fox listed today the worst cities to play football in. for football fans. I'm going to get to that in a couple of minutes. There are news and notes. I'm tongue-tied. But to Josh Allen first. I think it's kind of cute that if he had fun with someone in the Bills Mafia and signed it that way. But I also think he needs to be smarter than that. Just don't sign stupid things like that. Because nowadays, with social media, everything that's going on, we hear about it here in Jacksonville. Is it going to change your opinion on Josh Allen? No, it's not a rivalry. They're not in the division. You know, you faced them a couple of times up there. They've beaten you both times. Come down here, you knock them around. That's the way it is, including the playoffs. I don't consider Buffalo any sort of rivalry. Or maybe you are the other way on this. Maybe you think this is just flat wrong, and it's PO'd you on a Monday. Hasn't for me. I just look at it simply as this comes down to what you have done and what you haven't done. And if I was Josh Allen right now, I would not do anything like that. I think it's basically a foolish move. But we'll see. Getting a lot of play here in town. And, you know, I'm sure Jalen Ramsey, the next time he's around, he'll be asked about it. And I don't expect him to be around answering any questions for quite some time because obviously OTAs until things really get underway with that in minicamp. And then that begs the whole question, what if Jalen doesn't show up because he wants to get paid? Which is something else that, you know, we will talk about in time. Because with all the decisions that this football team has to make in free agency, which begins in less than 1 month, I don't think that's really entered the equation of Jaguar fans. That could be a story that is so hurtful to this football team. It could be very destructive. And let's hope it never gets to that. Again, I've said all along I'd pay him. I'd pay him before year four. I know you're saying, why? What's wrong with you, Blue? Why would you pay him? He's got a rookie contract. You can pick up the fifth-year option. You can franchise him for year six. Well, I don't want my best player unhappy. That's my answer. Now, the logistics are confusing. Well, if you pay him, you can't possibly pay Nick Foles or someone else. Well, okay, I'm not paying Nick Foles anyway. I'm drafting Dwayne Haskins. Ah, well, obviously, Bill, you didn't read Mel Kiper's mock today, where he said the team right in front of him, the New York Giants, are going to draft Dwayne Haskins. So where does that leave you in Jacksonville? Well, we'll discuss that. That's coming up. That's part of news and notes. We'll do that on the other side, brought to you each and every night by our good friends at TruckCrashLaw.com. Some on that. Got some Florida State news to dive into. Fox named their worst football city. What? I don't know if you saw. And they really did it without anything outside of just their opinion. There's really no statistical data or anything else that they point to. It was just kind of like, well, it must be like it's a slow day in the NFL, so let's create this. What would be the worst city to be in if you're a football fan? Asinine. Yet, I'm in. I bought it. Hook, line, sinker. We'll talk about it next. Part of Truth Teller News and Notes on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, top 25 college basketball on tap tonight. We'll get to the poll here briefly. I need to have a button in here that plays the Beatles, Helter Skelter. Because I do. I think when you look, I feel pretty comfortable about saying this. I think if you look around or just listen around or whatever, out of any hosts, I probably go to the computer the least of anyone. I'm basically whatever it is in my head, I have, and that's what I go with. But here I try to be cool, I try to be hip, and I try to come out and say, tonight, top 25 college basketball, and I go to Helter Skelter, which is another name for the computer here in the studio, and there's no way, that is going to come up on cue when I ask it to. So it is not. And I will now go to my phone with my sausage fingers and pull up tonight, top 25. You got Virginia, Virginia Tech. Who cares? Illinois against Wisconsin, 18-13. What's that with like 5 minutes to go in the second half if they're playing classic Wisconsin basketball? Oh, my apology. 4 minutes to go in the first half. And then tonight, Kansas State, which has a chance to win the Big 12 against West Virginia. So kind of a light night overall as far as basketball. But that's a learning lesson I need to jot down for myself, is don't ever go to something when you're dealing with Helter Skelter. In other words, the studio computer. Let's get to it. Tonight's Truth Teller at News and Notes, brought to you by TruckCrashLaw.com. All right, anyone that you're aware of, I shouldn't say it that way, any type of, really just, boy, I was seeing it last night, too, driving home. I wasn't driving, obviously. The GF was. Coming back from the Daytona 500, and, you know, you just got to assume there's a lot of people out there drinking. But why is it that people just will move right in front of you without a blinker? It's really rough out there, and I hate it. And there is such bad driving, and it costs people lives. It does. Oftentimes, the innocent, their lives. So if you've been around it, you've seen it, it's happened to you recently where someone has been really hurt or someone has died and it's been because of an RV or a bus or a tractor trailer, you need to go to TruckCrashLaw.com. They're the only law firm in the state of Florida where this is their expertise. There's plenty of other law firms. They're going to end up sending you here anyway. This is what they do. TruckCrashLaw.com. Go to them today. All right. Let's begin with Tiger Woods. Why not? I mean, the guy's played some good golf. In his last four events now that he has entered on the PGA Tour, he has top 20 finishes in the top four. Played really well coming out of the gate. I'm trying to think now of the rain delays and everything. Probably Saturday when he began his third round, which obviously he only had a chance to get in, a few holes because of darkness. But he began with three consecutive, actually it was either three or four consecutive threes. But, you know, watched a lot of him. Tee to green, did some nice things. Of course, he won an event late last year. I'm not going to go as far as the throw out. Is this the year that Tiger can win a major? Because there's so many great golfers right now on the PGA Tour, but he is competitive. And when he is competitive, it makes for overall a much better sport. Happy to see as well J.B. Holmes win yesterday, and it was a great leaderboard with Justin Thomas, who did not play well. Boy, that course really responded on Sunday. Tough day to shoot for most of these golfers. Rory McIlroy finished at minus 11, so, you know, very competitive leaderboard, and they'll wrap things up there. The West Coast Swing get ready to head this way. Or you know it, it'll be the Players' Championship. But Tiger, with a real legitimate shot, I think, to continue to battle, get some top 20s, maybe some top 10s, and who knows, maybe win another event. I know at one point 100 wins wasn't out of question for Tiger Woods, and certainly 18 majors wasn't out of question. I think just one more major would be a tremendous accomplishment for Tiger Woods when it's all said and done. But we shall see. All right, let's get to this Fox. Let me find it again. I mean, I'm just doing my deal today, and I'm looking around, and I'm like, what am I talking about tonight? And I'm trying to find what's out there and what's available. And Fox just drops on football fans with really nothing to support their argument. This, worst cities for NFL fans. The number one worst city for an NFL fan. You seen this, LeVay? Have you seen it? Okay, at least you're honest.
I just read it during the break, right. Actually.
Houston. How can you pick Houston? It can't be for their product. I mean, they've won their division, what, 4 to 5 times as of late. They've got star power, both offensively with a young quarterback and Deshaun Watson, one of the best wide receivers in the game. They've got, I saw J.J. Watt yesterday, oh, by the way, at the Daytona 500. I snapped a photo of him and said, we'll see you in London. But they have plenty of good football players on that side of the field. Beautiful stadium. It's a great city. Why would Houston be number? Again, we have no data here to back this up. Number two, Jacksonville. Worst city for NFL fans, Jacksonville. I mean, I just went an hour down the road to the Daytona 500 yesterday. It was 80 degrees. I'm back here. I'm going to play golf all week. You got the Players' Championship coming in 3 weeks. You got guys playing college baseball here. You got high school baseball going on. Everyone's playing golf. People going to the beach. This is one of the worst NFL cities, according to Fox. Why?
You are a hater.
Why? I mean, tell us why. The quality of life here is spectacular. Nashville's third. So, obviously, the trend is we're just going to rip apart the AFC South. The AFC South is nothing as far as we are concerned. Nashville's a fun town. I think it's a little overrated. It's probably because every time I go there, it's freaking cold. All right? Jags seem to play there late in December. Good. Trying to figure it out. That, you know, newer franchise, obviously. And again, Jacksonville hasn't been around forever. Neither is Houston. So they're kind of picking on newer franchises. Again, they don't tell us why. Number four, Cleveland. Ah, you finally are making some sense. Just remember, we get to wake up tomorrow in Jacksonville. You're waking up tomorrow in Cleveland. If you don't think that means something, you're missing out. Can you imagine? It's 8:47. Kissing the wife goodbye, or kissing her goodnight right now in Cleveland, where it's 10 degrees. You're getting ready to shut her down, and then you got to get up at 6 a.m. and go to work, where, again, it's 10 degrees in Cleveland. Yet they rank them ahead of Jacksonville, number four. Number five, Tampa. What? Tampa? What's there not to like about Tampa? Okay, their football team is down. I'll give you that. But it's still a great place. Everything that Jacksonville has, a little bit bigger. Cool beach. Great golf. If you're a hockey fan, great hockey team. I mean, I just don't understand why they're going after what I think are great cities. Houston, Jacksonville, and Tampa. To a little bit lesser extent, I'm going to say Nashville. I'm sorry. I'm not as sold on Nashville as others. Probably because I'm not a huge country music fan. I like my time in Nashville, but I also like seeing it in the rearview mirror when we're heading the hell out of there. Cleveland's a freaking joke. Cleveland should be one. Let me give you my official rankings. My top five. Number one, Cleveland. Okay? I mean, I honestly don't know if there's a worse place in the United States of America than Cleveland. I'm putting them in at one. Number two, if it is, it's Buffalo. Congratulations. You're in at number two in Baloo's list for worst cities for NFL fans. Number three, Green Bay. You know what you do in Green Bay on a Monday night? You go to Applebee's. You know what you do on Green Bay on a Tuesday night? You go to Applebee's. Green Bay comes in at number three. Number four. I'm just going to leave it at the top three. That's it. That's good enough for me. Cleveland, Buffalo, and Green Bay. There's really no other place out there that I hate. I mean, some people would pick Oakland, and that makes some sense, but see the way those Sons of Anarchy guys work and stuff like that? I don't really feel like catching a bullet in the forehead. So I'm not going to say Oakland. Seattle's beautiful. L.A., they don't have any fans, but that's pretty cool. I mean, Indy doesn't really do it for me, but it's kind of cool. I mean, Minnesota's right. There's really not another Haiti city that I really dislike. So I'm going to go with my top three, Cleveland, Buffalo, and Green Bay. Anyway, pretty disturbing stuff there. And again, just give us a little bit of info as to why you actually came out with the list the way that you did instead of just picking on the AFC South. But there you have it, truckcrashlaw.com. Each and every day, they give you truth teller news and notes.
Now, the 2-minute drill, delivered by Moe's Southwest Grill.
Welcome to Moe's!
Waiting in line is so 2018. App your way to the front of the line. Order Moe's online or in the app. Walk in, grab the food, and go.
All right, James Coleman is here. Time for the sports den. What's going on?
Not much, man. We just can't buy a break. I mean, people just like to pick on Jacksonville at any given moment, huh?
I've told this story many times, James, but I really realized how bothered I was by this when I was actually living in Chicago and I didn't come back here for the Super Bowl that year, but was listening to local radio shows that were out here in Jacksonville, just ripping apart Jacksonville. And I'm like going to my car and it's like 15 degrees and I'm freezing. And I'm like, why are these people in Chicago picking on Jacksonville?
I mean, it's 80 degrees today. I mean, I'm in shorts. And my buddy who actually lives in Cleveland, who I was just sharing with the guys my Cleveland story, like he's freezing up there.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, listen, quality of life, that element should come into play. They should at least provide for us some data as to why they're saying that these cities, and I, you know, Houston's a great city. Jacksonville's a great city. I like Tampa. My brothers live there. Right. Every time I go to Tampa, I always have a great time.
I love to. I mean, is it the fans? I mean, we
don't know.
We
don't have the data.
Good. I mean, is it the city? I mean, it's plenty worse. There's a lot worse cities that I would like to be in. I mean,
oh, no doubt.
The reality is no matter what, you're one of 32 cities that, well, 31 cities, no, 30 cities that everybody wants to be a part of.
Right.
Because there's an NFL team there.
Yeah, New York and L.A. with two. Besides that, you got 30 of them, no doubt about it. What's coming up?
We'll talk about that. We'll get into a little bit of college. FSU can't buy a break with the portal. Things official with Coach Fry getting the can over the weekend. We'll probably talk about a local kid here picking up a commitment from Alabama. Just a lot of things going on in football. For it to be the offseason, it's pretty busy.
It really is. And tomorrow's a big day for the Jags. You know, ASJ will be cut tomorrow. He's been notified. The Jags pick up a couple of guys today, or picked up their options, including Calais Campbell. All right, James, have fun, buddy.
All right.
James Coleman, Denny Thompson coming up right now. Final look at tonight's poll. What do you have for us, Matthew LeVay?
Yeah, Rick, we put it out there. Outside of Bill Belichick, who's the best NFL head coach right now? Well, 47% say Andy Reid. Meanwhile, in second place, 41% say Sean Payton. Mike Tomlin at the bottom at 5%, and 7% say they'll go with someone else.
All right, there you have it. You can still contribute to that poll brought to you by Exit Real Estate. Yeah, that was a tough question, I thought. I mean, it just if you look at it that way, it's really kind of bizarre the way the NFL is with that position. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that they just fire and hire, and that's the NFL. Duke, number one in America after Tennessee lost to Kentucky. Kentucky at 4, Tennessee at 3. Noles are up to 16 after an impressive victory. They won 7 straight.
Go Noles!
Playing some good hoops is Florida State. What do they have? I know they're back on the road for the third straight road game. Come on, Helter Skelter. Do not let me down. They go to Clemson. That'll be tomorrow night. And we'll be able to discuss that because that game will be over by the time we're on the air. They tip early tomorrow night at 6. Remember, tomorrow night, because the Helmets and Heels, 8 to 10. If not, the Rick Belew Show each and every weeknight, 7 to 9. Thank you to producer Matthew LeVay. My name is Rick Belew. We're back tomorrow at 7 o'clock.